little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
This is an extended shared option discussion with Brenda about long-term low back pain and recurrent sciatica. Hi, Brenda. Thanks for coming back in. We met last week about your low back pain.
Yes.
Perhaps if you could, before we get talking in detail about what options might work for you regarding this low back pain, perhaps you could just share with us a little bit more about how this has affected you.
It affects me because I can't sleep on a night time. I don't get a full night's sleep, which then in turn has affected me during the day because I'm so tired I can't concentrate 100%. Basically, when I try to turn over in the night, I wake up in pain because I feel that I can't move. And then when I do get up in the morning, I have to just shuffle and take little steps until my body kind of warms up a bit before I can actually move freely.
Hmm. Okay. So if I could just go back over the story that you shared with me last week. You've had this problem on and off, particularly for the last couple of years.
Yes.
Of late, it's been affecting you so much that it stopped you from doing a lot of the activities that you would normally do.
Yes.
Usually you would do quite a lot of fitness work, a lot of swimming,
yes,
and quite a lot of high impact work.
Yes.
And over the course of the last 8 weeks now, you've had to lay off from the high impact work because you've had so much in the way of back pain. Now, back pain is affecting your sleep, as you mentioned before, and it's also affecting your activities. But it tends to be in the low back and doesn't seem to go anywhere else.
No, it's just the lower back.
Yeah, okay. You had some investigations done because of this trouble, because it's been an on-off problem over a period of quite some time. Mm-hmm. 2 years I've written down, is that right?
That's right. It started about 2 years ago and I ended up having an MRI scan where it showed I had excessively worn discs, L1 and L2, which then led to sciatica. I've had sciatica on and off for about the last 2 years, but this pain, it seems different. It just feels lower down and it's every night, whereas this with the sciatica and the previous back pain, the back pain didn't last too long, but it was the sciatica that then lasted maybe about 5 weeks each time.
Yeah, that's helpful to hear. You've also mentioned to me last time that most of your work is at a desk. You work for Nissan.
Yes.
A lot of your work is desk work. You've got two kids, aged 9 and 11, and also your parents live in the same house, is that right?
No, my parents don't live in the same house, but they do a lot of childcare in terms of taking the kids to school in the morning.
They pitch in and help out, don't they? Make life doable.
Yeah.
No partner at home?
No.
No, okay. Are you involved at the moment with anybody?
I am seeing somebody at the moment, but we don't live together.
Okay. So not generally available to support you with activities around the house at all? Okay, that's helpful to know. And in terms of your activities, you've never been a smoker and not a big drinker or anything like that. And you also mentioned that you've tried naproxen for this. You've had no side effects or any problems with that.
No.
We've checked your blood pressure before and your blood pressure's always been fine. You've never had any stomach ulcer or any irritation of your stomach when you've been using naproxen.
No.
So that's all helpful when it comes to help me help you figure out what's going to be the most effective way of dealing with your pain, as well as what are the safest options.
Yes.
So I'll try and put you in a better position to be able to make long-term decisions, because this sounds like a long-term on-off problem, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. Okay.
Before we go any further, perhaps you could just tell me a little bit about what you think, why do you think that you have this problem with your back?
I think it is an arthritic problem. My mother suffers from arthritis as well, particularly in her back. And I think it's quite genetic. To try and help that, I have reduced the amount of high-intensive exercise I've done, but I'm trying to lift more weights and swim more now to try and strengthen the my core to obviously support me spine.
Yeah,
I am sleeping now with a pillow in between my legs, which seems to help. I can then move more freely earlier when I get up.
Mm.
Doesn't take as long. And I'm now taking amitriptyline on a night time. And I'm fine now. I'm not waking up till maybe it's about 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
I have to take the tablet about maybe it's 9 or 10 o'clock at night before I go to bed.
We're going to come back to that decision to take amitriptyline shortly, if that's okay. But before we do that, you mentioned about your own thoughts and your, the condition that you've got at the moment. So you mentioned before that you thought it was an arthritic condition. Mm-hmm. What leads you to think that?
I think the pain, and I also get a pain in my thumb joint particularly.
Yeah.
My brother and sister both have arthritis in their fingers. They're both about my age, just 2 years. My brother's 2 years older than me. My sister's 2 years younger than me. And we all seem to be suffering from the same kind of things.
Okay, so other joints are affected, family history. Mm-hmm. And you also had a scan, and the scan showed some wear and tear type changes in your low back. Okay.
Yes.
And you also mentioned that you suffered with sciatica on and off. And what does sciatica mean to you?
The first spate of sciatica I had was debilitating. I couldn't move. I couldn't walk. I couldn't sit down particularly. I work 5 miles away from where I live, and I had to stop halfway in the journey so I could lie on my front on the back seat just to relieve the pain from basically my glute. I just couldn't sit at that position. At that point in time, I ended up working from home on my laptop, lying on the floor. The second time I had it wasn't as severe, and I could work, but I'd work at my desk stood up. So I had a raised workstation, and I worked like that for 5 weeks. Each time it's been a 5 week long period where the sciatica's been quite bad.
And what have you been told about sciatica? What actually happens with sciatica?
That it starts from the back pain. That's what initiates it. So the root cause is the back pain.
Yeah.
But when I had sciatica, I didn't have the back pain. It just went straight into sciatica. So the main pain was in my glute, and it would affect my leg.
All the way down the leg, below the knee.
Below the knee, but that wasn't the most intensive pain. The pain was in the glute. So
has there been any mention of the disc in your back?
No.
Okay. So the thought usually with sciatica is that when you've got a disc that's bulging out a little bit, mm-hmm. and it sometimes presses against the nerve that goes down your leg, and that's why you feel the pain that goes all the way down the leg.
Yeah.
Okay. And usually that will just pop back in again.
Mm-hmm.
But while it's there and out and it's pressing against the nerve, you need help to deal with that pain.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we want to make sure it doesn't progress to cause other problems as well. Did you have any particular concerns when it came to all of this pain?
My main concern throughout this and long-term health problems, potentially, is my ability to work, because I need to be able to work. And that's the most fundamental thing, I guess, is the worry that you can't actually go to work anymore.
Yeah, okay. And in that regard, was there anything that you were hoping that I would do for you today?
Well, for me, like I said a couple of weeks ago, it's being able to sleep on a night so that I can work during the day. I do have to concentrate quite a lot at work. And sometimes when you're overtired and you're sleep deprived, it stops you from doing that.
Okay. So getting a decent night's sleep is a priority.
Yeah.
And also allowing you to carry on with your daily activities and for it to not interfere too much with your activities when it comes to keeping fit and keeping active.
Yeah.
Those are all priorities for you. Okay, that's helpful to know. Good, lovely. I examined you last time. I'm not proposing to examine you again this time, but I just wanted to double check. We talked about those danger or worrying signs that could go along occasionally with somebody who's got severe low back pain. Mm-hmm. Can I double check? You've never had cancer?
No.
Your weight's stable?
Yeah.
You've got no loss of control of your bladder or bowels at all, a normal feeling of your backside, and no numbness or weakness below the knees.
No.
Fantastic. Okay. Good. So we're going to explore the possibilities for you in terms of pain. And I know you've already made a choice, but I'm going to include that choice with some of the options that we discuss now. The very fact that you've got pain that's been going on for a long period of time, we call that chronic pain, so that's long-term pain.
Mm-hmm.
So pain that's technically been going on for longer than 12 weeks would be called chronic pain. But that just tries to help you and me figure out which of these charts that we're going to use to decide on which painkillers that you might want to use.
Right.
So we've got some option grids here that hopefully will put both of us in a better position to be able to discuss which sort of painkiller that you might want to use.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an option grid for long-term and flare-up medication options here. Generally speaking, for back pain, there's not much evidence that paracetamol is a very useful painkiller, but some people find it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, it's a relatively safe treatment to be using. For other types of pain, out of 100 people using paracetamol for generalized pain, we would find that maybe 25 out of that 100 would get some benefit from using that, mm-hmm. in the order of about improving their pain score by about a half. So if we assume that your pain score is scored out of 10, the worst pain ever is going to be 10, yeah. and no pain at all is going to be 0. If you were giving me, say, a pain score of 8,
mm-hmm.
and we reduce that to a pain score of 4, then that's what we're talking about. So 25% of people would find that for normal pain, for long-term pain or flare-ups of pain, but not back pain, because this is very yeah. special, then we find that the paracetamol would work to that extent in 25% of people. If I was going to offer you cocodamol, you might expect that to have a better impact upon pain.
Yeah.
So it would improve pain, the perception of pain, in 50% of people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that would be that they would reduce their pain score by 50% from what they previously had. So for that example would be to take the pain score down from 8 to 4 in those people. The downside of introducing painkillers like opiates,
yeah.
codeine, tramadol, that family of medication, mm-hmm. is that they seem to work quite well for short-term pain,
mm-hmm.
but there's an awful lot of debate about how safe and effective they are for long-term pain. And I've yeah. got some very real reservations.
Mm-hmm.
They might increase your overall sensitivity to pain and make you more dependent upon using painkillers in the long term. So there are some serious reservations about, should we be recommending codeine, tramadol, and that family of medications to people with long-term pain? My gut instinct is where you have other choices
mm-hmm.
that are going to be safer and possibly more effective, then probably they're the ones that we would rather you used in the first instance rather than codeine or tramadol.
I have taken tramadol before, and I would never take it again. I took it for about 3 weeks the first time I had sciatica. And when I stopped taking them, it was horrendous. It took about a week. I was waking up in the night, I had cold sweats, crazy dreams, waking up thinking I had no legs. And it's just not something I would go through again.
Yeah.
But for me personally, that made us more aware that I had to come off them.
Yeah.
Whereas I could see why people would then just continue to take them to just get rid of that feeling,
yeah.
because it is quite horrendous.
So they do seem to be quite effective for pain,
yes.
after an operation, for example,
mm-hmm.
or pain where you've got no other option, no other choice, but they do have very real potential for dependence.
Yes.
And they also have side effects that may not be tolerated by many people, mm-hmm. which include constipation and drowsiness.
Yeah.
Drowsiness to such an extent that you potentially might not be able to drive.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not the most safe painkillers. They seem to be effective painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
As I said before, they were fine for cocodamol, which is that combination of paracetamol together with codeine.
Yes.
Then we can find that 50% of people will get an appreciable improvement in their pain. That's a 50% reduction in their pain score. But at what cost? Because it's got the codeine component to it, and there is the potential that you could become dependent upon them. That might realistically only affect 1 in 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other side effects. And now codeine and tramadol are quite different in terms of how they affect people in terms of the side effects.
Mm-hmm.
So nausea is another common side effect. But unpleasant side effects that you experienced, mm-hmm. particularly when you were trying to come off the tramadol,
yes.
Are very individual. So sometimes when you've got no other option, then I think it's okay to be trying these things with the short-term goal of
yeah.
relieving pain short-term, and then with the warning that sometimes it's a little bit difficult to come off these painkillers. Now, you've used naproxen in the past, and I think
yes.
you've probably used ibuprofen in the past, and
yes.
I just wanted to talk using your example of how helpful or otherwise those painkillers have been.
Well, I was using those, I think, alongside the tramadol.
Mm-hmm.
So it was probably a combination of everything that helped relieve the pain. But I don't think I took them regularly. I took them when I needed them,
mm-hmm.
rather than as a matter of course.
Again, these are potentially really very useful mm-hmm. painkillers. They're slightly more effective than paracetamol in terms of the benefit they give. For 30% of people, they will give an improvement in the pain scores by half. Mm-hmm. So they'll, again, take that pain score down, for example, from an 8 to a 4 in 50% of people. So a worthwhile pain improvement in the people that they benefit.
Yeah.
However, they do have potentials for causing difficulties. Quite uncomfortable about using them in people that have got high blood pressure because it tends to put their blood pressure up and can slightly increase their risk of having heart attacks. And also, if you've had a history of an upset stomach, an ulcer, for example, then they can increase the risk of you bleeding from your stomach. And we tend to just recommend them for short-term use because of that. Or if you had to use them, then you might need to think about taking something to protect your stomach, like a proton pump inhibitor, something like omeprazole, to protect your stomach while you're using them. So potentially they are very useful painkillers, but they do have their drawbacks. We tend not to recommend them as long-term treatments because of the potential that they can increase your blood pressure and they can increase your risk of bleeding from your stomach. Mm-hmm. But if they're the only thing that relieves your pain, then sometimes you have to use them. I've not mentioned anything about the mechanism about how these painkillers work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably not particularly important for you to understand. The thing is, all that they do is that they relieve the pain to allow you to get on with your normal life.
Yeah.
What you do need to know about is the potential side effects and the potential risks to your long-term health. Those are the important factors. And this option grid is available for you to take away, for you to read up yourself. And then if you have any questions related to whether it be mode of action, whether it be side effects, whether it be risks or pros or cons, then you can always give me a telephone call to discuss those in the future if you wanted to. Okay. We're going to talk a little bit more about other pain medication options. Mm-hmm. So this is the chart that I shared with you briefly last week, mm-hmm. which was the painkillers which were originally developed to deal with nerve-type mm-hmm. pain. And we use this one to illustrate that amitriptyline might be something useful for you.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason that you chose amitriptyline last time was because your sleep was disordered.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But because you've previously and repeatedly had problems with sciatica,
mm-hmm.
and sciatica is where the nerve has been trapped and nipped and irritated, and you're often getting problems with nerve-type pain, then it made sense for us to think about using something that had evidence behind it for dealing with your type of pain. So if we give amitriptyline in the right dose for each individual patient, we'll find that 30% of people will get a reduction in their pain score by half or more. So they'll reduce their pain score again, potentially from an 8 to a 4 if they've got an 8 pain score in the first instance. And the idea of amitriptyline is, originally it was developed as an antidepressant. We're not using it as an antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem to have any problems with addiction potential, but it does have side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And the potential side effects that you can have with that, well, firstly, and happily for you, it tends to sedate you and help you to sleep.
Yeah.
So I will always recommend that you just take it on at night.
Mm-hmm.
Very occasionally I'll recommend during the day, but mm-hmm. actually the benefit you get from amitriptyline is going to be day long, whereas the side effect you get from amitriptyline is relatively short term. So you usually find that you're okay to take it before you go to sleep
mm-hmm.
in a small dose.
Yeah.
And then if you're still feeling drowsy the following morning, then maybe that dose is too high and you might even want to half those tablets or quarter those tablets. But if you've not had that sedation or enough of a decent night's sleep as a benefit from the amitriptyline, you can then increase the dose of amitriptyline, maybe up to 20, maybe up to 30, and occasionally up as high as 70 milligrams on a night. But it does take a while for that benefit to build up in your system. I need to mention some of the other potential side effects that go with amitriptyline. I'm sure we mentioned some of these to you last time. One of the most common things is a dry mouth.
Yes.
And most people, when they first go on it, notice a dry mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But that dry mouth tends to dwindle after you get used to it. Have you noticed that?
I have, yes.
Have you noticed any other problems?
No.
Everything else is fairly small print. Before we go on, perhaps we could find out how you're getting on. Because you mentioned to me that amitriptyline has already helped you with your sleep.
Yes.
Perhaps you could just let me know what your experiences are of it so far.
Like I said, I tend to be able to sleep now until about 4 o'clock in the morning before I wake up and can't turn over. I've had dry mouth throughout the day, well, quite frequently. But once I'm up and about, moving during the day, I'm fine. it's basically, it's through the night.
Yeah.
I can't lie on the sofa anymore or sit on a comfortable soft chair. In fact, I move the living room around, so I'm sat on a chair, right angles, to watch TV. So it's just adapting your lifestyle as well to try and relieve the pain as much as possible.
Yeah. Can I ask you what your pain score was before you came to see me?
The pain score was probably about an 8 at that point when I couldn't move. And now it's maybe at about a 6.
So it's been a move in the right direction.
Yes.
And I don't normally find that amitriptyline works particularly quickly for pain.
No.
I tend to find it builds up slowly in the system, mm-hmm. allows you to get moving, allows you to sleep, mm-hmm. and allows you to become more active. And then the pain tends to dwindle mm-hmm. slowly. Okay. So it makes things manageable. But we seem to be moving generally in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk a little bit about their alternatives to amitriptyline. Mm-hmm. They have their potential problems. So the next group of medication is gabapentin and pregabalin. And right. I talk about them together because they're based on the same active medication. They both have about the same potential benefits. Again, they seem to work quite well for nerve pain, but they only work in about 12% of people in terms of reducing their pain score by a half.
Right, okay.
So not nearly as good in terms of the benefit, and they have problems mm-hmm. in that they tend to be misused. They have something of a dependence potential. They probably wouldn't be my first line.
Mm-hmm.
My inclination personally is to stay on low doses of most of these medications because the lower the dose, the less side effects and less problems and complications you get from all of these medications. And the higher the dose, the more likely you are to have more of the side effects and more of the problems, potentially the dependence side of things. So I'm more inclined to say, try at the low dose. If you're getting some benefit, then potentially you might want to think about slightly higher doses, but the most of the benefit is going to be on the low doses. Again, all of these medications can interact with alcohol, potentially make you more sedated. Mm-hmm. I tend to encourage people generally with all of this group of nerve-like medications to take them on a night time. Quite small print at the end of all of this, there I'm going to mention capsaicin cream. Now, what I didn't mention before when we're talking about generalized pain is that a lot of people who've got arthritic conditions, mm-hmm. you mentioned that you're concerned that you might have an arthritic condition here, will find particularly in small joints and in knees and ankles that they'll get considerable pain improvement from a rub-on cream. Mm-hmm. Those rub-on creams tend to be anti-inflammatory painkillers. Not that that's important, but they just seem to work for pain. And they seem to be a lot safer when given as a rub-on version. Right. It doesn't seem to work quite so well for hip joints, mm-hmm. but for almost all other joints, mm-hmm. there seems to be an appreciable improvement. And at least they're safe. They don't work for everybody, but at least they're safe. It's very rare for me to have a significant skin reaction mm-hmm. in a patient who's been using these. So they're worth a go, mm-hmm. and they seem to be very safe. Now, we're going to talk again about this other option for nerve-type pain. Mm-hmm. And this is this cream called capsaicin cream, which is based on the chili pepper.
Right.
So if you imagine you take a little bit of chili pepper and you put it onto a painful joint, and the idea is that by stimulating the nerve endings around the joint, mm-hmm. you actually distract yourself significantly from the nerve pain that's linked to that area. Again, it's very much down the pecking order in terms of how effective mm-hmm. it is compared to the other options for nerve pain. And it works in about one in 10 people. So 10% of people mm-hmm. will get that 50% benefit. And some people will find a considerable burning sensation around that area. So if you've got nerve type pain affecting a particular area, mm-hmm. for example, after shingles, then it can be helpful for that. Mm-hmm. But it can actually cause burning to the skin. So just need to be very careful with how you would use it. Do you have any questions at this stage?
I don't know.
Okay. So in terms of your individual experience and your individual problem with the pain in your low back, did you have any other things that after listening to the discussion that you wanted to ask me more about?
No, I believe it can take up to 6 weeks for amitriptyline to work, and there has been noticeable difference. I've been taking them for about 10 days now. It's been a noticeable difference in the last two nights, particularly where I have slept longer. So obviously it is taking a while to work, but you've just got to be patient and stick in with it.
How should we leave things today?
I'll continue to take them and just see how it goes over the next couple of weeks.
So in terms of having plenty of medication over Christmas time,
yes.
You've got enough to be going on with?
Yes.
Until when?
Probably about another 3 weeks.
Okay. So perhaps if we touch base before the end of the 3 weeks.
Right.
So you may choose to increase the dose, and that would be fine by me, as long as you're not experiencing too much in the way of side effects.
Right,
okay. So the side effects, as we mentioned before, the dryness in the mouth and not feeling too drowsy in the morning. Mm-hmm. If you are drowsy in the morning, don't drive.
Yeah.
It sounds like this is going to be a useful treatment for you going forward, I guess.
Yes.
I also talked about activity last time with you, and what we're very much aiming for you to be able to do is to get back towards your normal levels of activity. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned high impact, and I just wanted to touch upon that, if
yes.
that's okay. Could you just share with me what you mean by high impact?
Well, I was doing a lot of club-size exercise classes, which is a lot of star jumps, jumping around, and I was going on the treadmill, which obviously every time you put your foot down, you're impacting on your spine.
Yeah.
And I think it's those kind of movements that I really had to stop, and it was actually making it worse rather than better.
Yeah, okay. Now, the treadmill tends to be better than road running, but still, if it's something that seems to be making the sciatica more likely to happen, you might want to take advice from either your physical therapist at the gym
yeah.
or from a physiotherapist
mm-hmm.
In terms of what they would recommend that you should be thinking about in the long term
yes.
in terms of keeping as active and as fit as you possibly yeah. can. Good. Okay. Well, if it's okay with you, then I would suggest that we think about putting amitriptyline on as a repeat prescription for you. But before I do that, I'm just going to check in terms of psychiatric histories
mm-hmm.
and your emotional health.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had difficulties with suicidal thoughts in the past?
No.
Okay. These are dangerous in overdose, and they do need to be kept safe from the rest of the family, so make sure that that's the case. If you're going to be drinking, then they can increase the effects of your alcohol consumption as well. So just bear that one in mind.
Okay.
I know that's not an issue for you,
yeah.
but it's something that I need to broadcast and mm-hmm. make other people aware of. I'll put that on as a repeat prescription for you today.
Okay.
But it'd be helpful to speak to you on the phone
okay.
just to make sure that we're moving in the right direction.
Okay.
And I'm happy to potentially, short-term-wise, to co-prescribe any of the other medications if we really need it, bearing in mind the pros and cons that we've already discussed.
Yes, okay.
Great. Can I give you some of these to take away so that you've got some of those discussions to mull over, and then you can always get back to me after you've read them.
Okay.
But they're also available on our website, so that's realgeneralpractice.org,
right.
so you can access them on there as well.
Okay.
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no